Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast via Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors put away the Houston Rockets. With relative ease, I would have to say, by a score of 122-111. Look, the Houston Rockets are down bad. They're down. They're really down. I believe this is their 10th straight loss. They're sliding fast. I mean, to be honest, it's a loss season for them. They're 11-20. Let's just count what they had, okay? They had James Harden demanding a trade to start the season, you know, showing up to, well, choosing not to show up to training camp, but instead going to strip clubs and violating COVID protocol. Then he finally shows up to training camp, and, you know, there were some incriminating pictures, I would say. Didn't appear to be in, let's say, playoff game shape. And then, of course, he gets traded. Then the team loses Christian Wood, who was like the only good thing. Well, not the only good thing. I thought John Wall's been a pretty nice positive for them, but, you know, that happens. Of course, they trade Russell Westbrook, so big changes. They change their head coach, and Christian Wood goes out. He'd been giving them like 20-10, and I don't know, man. It's just kind of sad watching them. It really was. I mean, it was a really easy win in the sense that the Raptors didn't have to work that hard to get what was, at the end, a very... you know, easy win. And, you know, of course, there were tight moments, of course. Like, you know, the Raptors built the lead to 23 points. And then in classic Raptor fashion, they stopped scoring for, like, I don't know, like 3 minutes. And the Houston Rockets were able to make a comeback. You know, the Rockets went from shooting, like, 0 for 10 from 3 in the third quarter to, like, making a bunch of threes. And, okay, they're making a comeback. But there's just no life in that team. I mean, they got the lead down to 6 points with 4 minutes, like, 4.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And I'm watching, and I'm like, damn, the Raptors just playing with their food. Like, please go finish this out, close it out. Like, it's gonna have a professional effort. Like, don't give a game away. But there was really no threat of that. It's like the Raptors just put their starters back in, and they pumped that lead up to 13 really quickly, and it was game over. I mean, maybe I was silly to doubt even a little bit, but, like, the Rockets just had no life whatsoever, and, just bad vibes all around from that team, you know. Obviously, guys there are very temporary. John Wall got traded there. He didn't want to go there. Of course, you know, he's very loyal to the D.C. area. He's played there his whole career. And, of course, he gets blindsided with that trade. So he doesn't really want to be there. He's trying to make the best of his situation because he hasn't played in 2 years. But, you know, it's still not his choice. Victor Oladipo gets traded there. He's an unexpiring deal. You know, he's just kind of passing through. PJ Tucker literally wants to get traded, and he's made that very clear. You know, Eric Gordon, probably the same deal. And they got some random young guys, but also it's just a lot of random guys, and sad situation. Whereas if you compare the Rockets to the Raptors, Raptors just lots of good vibes all around tonight. And of course, it's a difficult situation because the Raptors announced earlier in the day that Nick Nurse is one of six coaches for the Raptors who are in the health and safety protocols. I believe this is the first time coaches have gone into that protocol, so I'm not totally sure what happened. Again, these guys are very tight-lipped with details. Every time you get Bobby Webster and you ask him a question about COVID, he's gonna he's got one of the best, like, I'm here just so I just don't get fined responses. He's just very tight-lipped about everything. But yeah, so the coaching staff is out. I mean, we made jokes for like half the day about the fact that Nick Nurse was going to have to coach the team through Zoom. And he's going to have to use the raise hand function to call timeout, or, you know, he's going to start cussing out the refs, and the refs are just going to hit the mute button or anything like that. But of course, that didn't actually end up happening. I mean, of course, that probably wouldn't have happened. The Raptors would have found a coach. The only issue was there were six coaches, so that was going to be tough. And of course, the fact that, at least up to this point, Sergio Scariolo, one of the three lead assistant coaches, had been away in Poland coaching, you know, the Spanish national team, and he only returned on Monday, shortly after the Raptors won against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, you know, it was uncertain. Of course, Scariolo just so happened that he concluded his quarantine in time to coach this game, and it was a difficult sort of circumstance, like describing it. It was a very, very, you know, as you can imagine, a whirlwind day. It's not something that you can just prepare for, something like this. And, you know, the Raptors typically, for a game like this, especially if you don't have practice, you're going to do a morning walkthrough, right? You get the players down, you take them through film, maybe even put them on the court, you know, basically just prepare for a game, right? Like studying for an exam. And, you know, they couldn't even do that, I think probably because none of the coaches were available to do it. I don't think Scariolo finished his quarantine until midway through the day. Probably had to submit two negative tests or something like that. And so they basically did all that stuff pregame, which is, generally speaking, pregame, I mean, players roll in. There's like a TV in the side and they're showing film. But I don't know how many players are watching that thing in entirety. Probably not, man. That's, you know, it's probably like the YouTube ads, like, you know, they'll give you like 5 seconds before you can skip the video, and you watch exactly 5 seconds to hit that, you spam that skip button. So I'm not totally sure how the Raptors fully prepare for this game. I'm not even sure how the Raptors found a coaching staff for this game, to be honest, because it seems like, okay, if one of the coaches, something happened to them, they test positive or they were exposed, then they were in a meeting, like, you would figure that's just kind of it, right? But the Raptors, you know, they had Scariolo because just out of pure luck that he was available. I mean, he was coaching overseas, so there was like a FIBA bubble, and so he came back, so that probably shortened the time needed to quarantine there. And then, you know, you look at the guys Raptors had. I mean, they actually had a decent number of coaches available. I thought, you know, a lot of guys you would recognize, like basically all the developmental coaches. And, you know, there's like, of course, there's like two types of coaches. Some coaches overlap, whatever. It's not strict, but developmental coaches are basically the guys that are on the floor to like work out with these guys. You know, when you see, if you come early to a Raptor game, for example, which hasn't happened in over a year, that's pretty wild. We come over, you know, early to a game, you'll see like Jamal McGlure, like just like working out with like the big guys, or like Mark Tinsdale, working out with Pascal Siakam, and Pascal attacking him one-on-one and just roasting this man repeatedly, or like Jim San and stuff like that. So that's basically what they had, and those are the three they had. And, you know, those guys were the lead assistants, and one of the lead assistants was Nick Nurse tonight. And honestly, Sergio did a great job. You know, I thought, again, the coaching in these circumstances is very difficult, and realistically, it's not like you're going to have the most prepared team and the most prepared game plan. So what you need to do really is just manage the course of the game. And the course of the game was, you know, I thought managed quite well. Again, the Rockets don't put up that much of a fight, but there are a unique opponent based on the way they play, right? They play five guards, pretty much, on the perimeter. Their tallest guy is Jayshon Tate, who, I mean, I don't know, man. He's 6'4", 6'5", right? Like, look at their starting lineup. PJ Tucker is, we know PJ Tucker is 6'4". Daniel House is like 6'5", and mostly because, you know, he has a lot of hair. Jayshon Tate is 6'4", 6'5". John Wall's like 6'3". And Victor Oladipo's like 6'3". That's their starting five. So, you know, obviously that's not a starting five that's going to succeed that much, especially when they don't play together. But or play for each other. But at the same time, you know, that's still a group where it is unique because you're not seeing a small ball group like that all the time. And of course, the Raptors, you know, again, fortunately, they've been playing a lot of small ball recently. But, you know, no Pascal tonight. Apparently, he was also in the health and safety protocol. I don't know if, like, six coaches were working on Pascal or something. I don't know, what happened. I didn't even want to speculate. But, you know, that there was a decision to be made as in terms of the rotation. They chose Chris Boucher to fill that spot in the starting five. I didn't think Chris did that great in that starting group. I think the Rockets five-out system kind of took away a lot from what Boucher usually does, which is play pick and roll, get downhill, use the speed to beat the defender, the big man. And usually, you know, when Boucher screens, two guys are going to the ball and Boucher's open for rolls or pick-and-pop threes. Because the Rockets were small, they were switching everything, like absolutely everything. So there wasn't many opportunities for Boucher to get open on a pick and roll or pick and pop. So he wasn't able to affect the game as much. Also, he had some open threes and he just missed those. Like, he had an air ball today. That might have been his first air ball of the season. So, you know, Scariolo decides to run extended lineups sort of, you know, between the Raptors starters and the bench. You know, OG picked up some early foul trouble, so he went to the bench a little bit as well. Nakah had some foul trouble late. You know, it was a, you know, of course, you got to coach. You got to manage a team. But again, that's something that's not unusual. I mean, like, listen, Sergio's a very accomplished coach, right? He's won tons overseas. He's obviously the coach of the national team for Spain. Won gold medals there. You know, won silver medals in the Olympics. You know, like, the dude, obviously, he knows how to coach. So, of course, he did a really good job managing the group. And honestly, there were just no issues. Like, I thought the team played well together. There were droughts offensively at times, and I think the switching defense can sometimes be a very tricky look for the Raptors to sort of solve, only because when you're switching a lot, teams kind of generally try to go one-on-one, right? Okay, you'll switch, fine, I'll screen with the defender, I'll screen with whoever is being guarded by the worst defender on the five, then, you know, you'll try to create a one-on-one opportunity and attack, right? Of course, like, if you've seen any LeBron playoff basketball in the last, like, decade, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, if you've seen the Raptors-LeBron series, you've seen those. So, you know, the Raptors kind of tried to do that, and sort of to varying degrees of success. I thought there were times where the Raptors, you know, got, I thought the Raptors' offense looked good when they were in transition, right? The Rockets were missing a ton of threes. They took 47 threes. They had, I don't know, 31 misses from three. So there was a lot of run-out opportunities. And their transition defense wasn't that great either. So the Raptors were able to get free that way. You know, I thought, honestly, when the Raptors played the regular pick-and-roll game, it didn't really produce the greatest results. But basically, whenever the Raptors guards drove, there was no help on the inside for the Rockets. Like, the Rockets, I mean, their lone big man tonight was Justin Patton, who my guy Sahal has been blowing up my DMs about this guy for like months, and he's like a 7-footer, but I mean, he basically just joined the team, so like, they don't have any bigs. So pretty much whenever the Raptors guards drove, someone had to rotate over, and I thought the Raptors did a better job when they were sort of playing and attacking the defense and driving inside, because again, there's no shot blocking. The tallest starter tonight was like 6'5". But then again, you know, that was also hit or miss too. I thought Fred, for example, was kind of miss, right? Like, Fred finished with 25 points, made 5 threes, got to the free throw line 8 times. That's all the good stuff. But Fred was 1 for 12 on twos. 1 for 12 on twos. I haven't seen him being that bad on twos since the Sixers series in 2019. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. There were a lot of opportunities where Fred drove inside, forced it, was looking for the foul call. And, you know, sometimes, yeah, okay, maybe you got the call. But, like, I mean, realistically, the refs gave him 8 free throws. That's pretty good for a regular Fred game. But there were just times where he was driving against guys who are bigger than him. And even if you do create a switch and you're attacking and things like that, I think it was like when Fred drove to pass, much better results. When Fred drove to score, especially with the guy draped on him, it was tough. And one thing is just, you know, I'm not saying Fred can't drive to score. We've seen Fred drive against Giannis and score, okay? I mean, like, of course, he's totally free to call his number. But I thought the Rockets just had some pretty athletic guys that could kind of hang with him and sort of contest at the basket. You know, he wasn't really getting that much separation because, you know, Fred usually gets separation off screens, and the Rockets are switching those, so there wasn't as much room to maneuver there or much of an advantage. And then when Fred drove inside, I mean, like, a lot of these guys are more athletic than him too, right? Like, you know, this guy getting blocked. He got blocked 4 times tonight, which is too many times. But on the flip side, you know, I thought Kyle did a really good job of sort of managing the game. Of course, Kyle sort of was more of a playmaker in terms of setting other people up than Fred. Kyle had a triple-double tonight, 20 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. Super chill night for Kyle. And I thought Kyle did a really good job of just setting everybody up. You know, when he drove, he was looking to pass. And you know, Kyle made some really good plays, as he normally does. Super efficient night. 6 of 9 from the field, and that gave you 20 points. Amazing for Kyle. And, you know, it was weird. I mean, Fred's struggling with the second unit a little bit. And of late, Fred has been doing a good job with the second unit. But usually speaking, when Fred is working with the second unit, Fred is option number 1, 2, and 3. And then number 4 is like a bailout 3 or like maybe a dunk. You know, so that wasn't working because Fred was struggling from the field overall. So kind of Sergio kind of shifted the starting or the rotation a little bit. It was more of Kyle with the bench tonight. And Kyle did a really good job, both with the starting group and the bench group, man. Just set everybody up. Like, I thought the Raptors were kind of, I don't know, they were kind of in the mud a little bit. I mean, they were scoring because the Rockets just aren't good defensively or aren't good, period. But you know, it kind of needed a spark still, and the Raptors got that spark from Kyle Lowry, who was working with the second unit, and this guy was working magic with the second unit, man. There's one play I remember at the end of the first quarter where Kyle, it was like the last shot of you know, last shot of the quarter, and I think Bembry had the ball up top, and Kyle Lowry was like, had his back turned towards the basket, so obviously he wasn't even looking at the play, and was just directing everybody else like a conductor would, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, over here, boom, here. This is where the flutes come in, and boom, this is where you got to hear it from the saxes, and you know, boom, I need that bass line from the tuba, and all this other stuff. Like, Kyle was literally waving his hands and moving people around. You know, Aaron Baines, go set the screen. Yuta Watanabe, get out of the lane and go to the corner. You know, that coach on the floor. Of course, that thing is, that trope is used so often, but it's very true. Like, honestly, you could see it working in real time. Kyle Lowry sort of moving the chess pieces. And the play worked. Baines screened for Bembry. There was I think Kyle was also supposed to screen, but the Rockets defense had given up a wide open lane, so Bembry just went straight to the basket and got fouled and got 2 free throws. It was great to see. And then in that second quarter, Kyle Lowry working the pick and roll with Baines. And this is, you know, against the Rockets' second unit. They did actually have a center there, so they weren't switching as much. And Kyle was even finding Baines for like layups. Like, honestly, I've already said this, but when you find Baines for a layup, that assist should be worth like 3, and not just 1. You got to have a conversion fee for that one, man. It's like an import tax or something. But yeah, I mean, Baines. I mean, he you know, Kyle got Baines to, you know, he got him in the lob at the basket, and then it was an alley oop dunk, but it was still an alley oop. Like, Baines caught the ball midair and put the ball in the net, which is an alley oop, from my opinion. You know, I thought just the way that sort of the rotation itself kind of worked its way out. I think it was a little bit more steady. Of course, there were other guys that were introduced, like Matt Thomas came in for one possession to sort of stretch the floor. You know, that didn't really work out well. Stanley came in for a very short stretch. Pat McCaw came in for a very short stretch. But for the most part, solid 9-man rotation, right? None of the starters played too many minutes. Fred played 38, but Fred plays 38 all the time. I don't know. He's one of the league leaders in minutes. Clearly, he can handle it. But Bembry was your 6th man. Watanabe was your 7th man, you know, along with Terrence Davis and Aaron Baines. And that was it. And those are the guys that were producing for the most part. I mean, you could maybe quibble with Davis a little bit. He made some, you know, bad decisions, but he also made some good places, too. He had a block. He made a 3. You know, set up Kyle for a quick 3 as well. So the second unit was working well. And then, really, I mean, in between all that, you just had Norm, who, like, again, this guy just gives you scoring, and it looks so easy. I don't understand. Like, Norm had played 33 minutes. Of course, I knew he was hot throughout the game, but, you know, look at the box score, and I'm really surprised. I'm like, 30 points from Norm. Like, I mean, and again, it just feels super easy with Norm. I think he's in rhythm so often. When he's playing out there with playmakers, it's working great. Especially, you know, in these games where Norm can get going early in the first quarter, and Norm was, again, he hit the gates running, got some open threes. You know, he even got a pull-up 3. Yeah, when he gets going early on, I mean, he usually sustains that and carries it over. And this is another game where, again, you kind of just need a guy who can score and finish plays for you. And Norm is that guy. Like, he's that guy almost every night. And it's been a real, real joy to watch, quite honestly. And I thought Norm was really crafty about the way he got his offense too, because, you know, obviously Norm's gonna get his open threes in transition, he's gonna get you know, runouts, you know, of course, when he has a guy closing a heart to him, he can kind of get into the lane and finish. We all know that, right? It's tricky footwork, all that stuff. But I think you're also starting to see Norm sort of introduce some other small counters. I thought, like, for example, at least like 3 or 4 times, I saw Norm Powell pump fake and try to create something. You know, he pump faked and got to the free throw line. He actually pump faked on back-to-back plays against Jayshon Tate, who is, generally speaking, a pretty good defender. And Powell's able to beat him. You know, Powell had, you know, PJ Tucker on him. And we all know PJ. And listen, PJ, I know he's not happy, but PJ still has pride. He's still got a guy who can guard. And the Raptors, you know, saw, obviously we saw him twice. The Raptors drafted him. And of course, he came back to the Raptors in 2017 for a very memorable stretch before he left to Houston to chase a championship, which didn't really fully work out. He could have just stayed for that title. But anyway, still love PJ, no hate whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, even PJ got some turns on Norm, and you would think, oh man, PJ Tucker, one of the best on-ball defenders in the league. Norm Powell just took PJ right to the block and just drove it inside and scored. And yeah, that's Norm right now. He's just, like, stuck on automatic. And it's... I don't know. It's just, again, everything comes within the flow. He's not forcing anything. He had 9 points in the first quarter. And yeah, I mean, he finished strong as well in the fourth quarter. Scoring 8 more there, 3 of 3 from the field, got a 3, made an and one. No, Norm was great, as he pretty much is every single night nowadays. I thought OG had some good moments. You know, he had a turnaround jumper out of the post, which is the second time I've seen him do it this season, where he's just posting up, usually against a guy who's smaller, and OG just like turning around and shooting a fadeaway. I don't know, man. If that's in OG's bag, I would love to see it more often. It's a shot that I don't think any defense is expecting. And he looks to be super balanced when he has it, which, of course, that is one of the issues with OG sometimes, that he loses his balance when he's trying to attack. And we've seen that today, too. Like, he had some turnovers trying to drive, forcing the issue. We all know, right? OG can sometimes drive and look mad awkward. But there are also times where he looks uncharacteristically smooth. And I thought that turnaround jumper looked really good for him. You know, cutting inside for dunks. You know, he had one at the end of the game. You know, hitting a 3 at the top. He's not really getting as many looks from 3 since coming back, and he hasn't really hit them as much. But 1 for 3 tonight is fine. You know, and honestly, when OG wants to really lock in and defend, I thought early in the game, you know, he got slapped for some foul trouble. He reached in a few times on John Wall, whatever. So, okay, so he didn't get involved too much early. But late in the game, when the Raptors needed to just, like, play 3 minutes of competent basketball to close it out and get the win, OG was everywhere defensively, securing defensive rebounds, you know, blocking shots. Like, he blocked John Wall. Yeah, you know, OG's OG. As we all understand, you know, we can trust a guy like that for sure. And I thought the guy who impressed me off the bench, in addition to Baines, was Bembry. Bembry was really, really smart. Obviously, we know this. We've seen many games of Bembry now. We know what his game is about. But, like, you know, he plays that role really well. Like, basically, he has the same role that Pat McCaw used to have last season, but Bembry finds himself more involved more often. I think part of the reason is just he's more of a factor at the basket. Like, when you watch McCaw now and you see Bembry, you just notice that, like, Bembry's, like, way bigger than this guy. And it's not like Bembry's that big. It's just McCaw's really slight. But Bembry's able to really finish around the basket, which was actually, I think, a concern of his coming in. Like, I saw some Hawks fans, I mean, you know, to the extent there are such things as Hawks fans, complain about DeAndre Bembry. I mean, of course, Bembry was very adored, but he was also considered a guy who was inefficient, and, you know, the numbers do suggest that as well. But, you know, one thing that sort of I've seen quoted about him was that, you know, his finishing wasn't that strong. You know, and to be honest, and when I'm looking at the numbers now, it wasn't that good. I mean, he was finishing between 0 and 3 feet, you know, 59.5% for his 4 years in Atlanta, which is fine. It's not great. It's a little below average, quite honestly. But this season, that number has bumped up with the Raptors to 77% within 3 feet. And I think a lot of those are just like Bembry playing off of guys who can play make and get him good looks. And what I mean by that is today, Bembry, you know, so the defense, you know, obviously, the, you know, people scout, they see the Bembry, or you don't have to scout, just look, open Basketball Reference, search up DeAndre Bembry, you'll know he's a sub 30% 3-point shooter. So the defense was sagging way off of him when he was working the paint, and then he had the ball up top. Defenders were kind of really dropping back. You know, when he worked the pick and roll, the guys would drop, you know, go under the pick and roll, which is very rare nowadays in the NBA. I feel like teams don't really go under that much anymore. But of course, that's probably because everyone can shoot the 3. But, you know, one way to sort of be effective offensively, especially when guys, you know, help off of you, is that you need to know when to cut and when to make an impact play and when to sort of catch the defense napping. And if your man's cheating off of you, when you catch him cheating, and, you know, you go along the baseline and you score. And that's what the Raptors did so well with Bembry tonight. Every single time Fred or Kyle was driving, Bembry was along the, and Bembry was along the baseline, this guy would try to, like, time his cut perfectly to get to the dunker spot, present himself for the dump off pass, and then finish strong too. Like, there's one play in the third quarter where he got baseline, finished an and one, and then another time, exact same play, is on the baseline, pump fake, the defender lands on him, for some reason no foul call, and Bembry throws up this, like, circus layup from, like, below his waist and kind of over his head, and that went in. Unbelievable play. And Bembry was just great. Like, literally, he worked that baseline all night. And, you know, he's a guy who can finish in transition as well. And, yeah, I mean, even the ball handling, you know, sometimes it feels like nowadays, like, guys are pressing up into him a little bit, and you are starting to see a little bit of the limitation of the ball handling. But you kind of do need another ball handler on the floor just so that you can get Kyle or Fred off the ball as a scoring threat for that second unit when they're playing those transitional lineups. And Bembry has been consistently good in those. So, all around a good game. Yuta Watanabe with the Euro step, another, he missed his threes, but had a really nice, like, banked in jumper after, you know, pump faking out of the corner, getting inside, and then shooting a little floating banked in jumper. That was nice to see, a nice little bit of skill. I want to see Yuta get more aggressive, man. I mean, I think the three is primarily the way he's going to score, but he can do a little bit of that Bembry stuff too. I can tell he's smart. He can handle the ball, not as well as Bembry, but he's bigger than Bembry. He's a bigger target. I want to see more from Yuta as well, and it's nice to see that he got back into the rotation because he hasn't been playing much of late. But yeah, seriously, nice one all around. And I thought, you know, the best moment was really just, like, in these difficult moments, you know, when you have to sort of make do and whatever. And of course, that's the whole thing with COVID, right? Like, you just got to make do and sort of be responsible and sort of figure it out. You know, it does produce moments where people can kind of step up and rise to the occasion, and that's always nice to see. Like, I thought Scariolo did a really great job with the coaching the team today. I'm not saying that that's the difference in the win or losing, whatever. He didn't make, like, a box and one in the finals or nothing like that, but did a great job. You know, I had no complaints about the coaching. Called timeouts when I felt, you know, like the team was, you know, teetering a little bit. You know, and it was great. Kyle Lowry chased down the game ball afterwards, as he does. He loves chasing it down. You know, afterwards, you know, Kyle was asked, you know, why do you always chase down the game ball? Kyle started saying how, you know, he saw MJ do it, he saw Kobe do it. So it's just a thing you can kind of pass down for generations and look back on these memories. I mean, why not? I mean, the NBA caught plenty of basketballs, man. You know, they can afford to give up a few for commemoration. And Kyle, of course, as he always does, you know, like earlier in the season when he chased it down for Fred, like after the NBA Finals when he chased down the rebound and got the NBA Game 6 championship ball in 2019, when Nick Nurse got his first win as a head coach, I remember Kyle giving it to him. You know, Malachi Flynn getting the game ball when he scored his first NBA basket. I mean, like, listen, man, Kyle Lowry, he might owe the NBA a check, to be honest. He's taking a lot of balls from these guys. Kyle Lowry's basically like the roof of a junior school. If you've ever climbed the roof of your elementary school, you'll find, like, probably like 65 basketballs up there just from people roofing balls. I don't know if people still do that nowadays. I guess people are all at home in virtual classrooms, but back in 2003, that was my shit. In any case, yeah, great moment. Kyle Lowry presenting the ball to Sergio Scariolo, and Sergio said after the game, you know, like, it's amazing. You know, it's this part. These are these small little things that Kyle Lowry does makes the team feel like a family. And that's so true. That is so true, man. And Kyle's like the dad for the whole group. You know, he even provides for guys like the coaches who are, you know, like double his age or whatever. But, you know, that's Kyle. So that's why any sort of conversations about trading Kyle or all this other stuff, I mean, it's like, would you trade your dad? Like, would you trade your dad? Like, just if you have a dad, if your dad is still with you, would you trade your dad? I wouldn't trade my dad for anything. So, you know, that's kind of where you're at. So, in terms of your three stars, first star goes to Kyle Lowry, 20 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. Should really be 11 with the game ball to Sergio at the end. 6-9 from the field, 4-5 from three, 4-4 from the free throw line, plus 22. It was actually real cute that the Rockets had David Nwaba, who tried to sort of get under Kyle Lowry's skin, you know, get physical, you know, like try to like, you know, knock the guy out a little bit, you know, like a bench guy versus like a starter, you know, like knock the guy out. He's real cute, man. It's real adorable trying to poke the bear. I mean, Kyle Lowry, he didn't even give him the time of day and just came in and closed the game. Kyle was great, man. Sensational. Plus 22 in the night. By far the best plus minus on the team. Second star goes to Norman Powell. 30 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block. But really, when you see Norm's stat line, what you need to read is the points and how efficiently he did it. Because that's generally all that matters. That's his job, is to go get a bucket. And he got a lot of buckets tonight. Very efficiently. 10 of 15 from the field. 4 of 8 from 3. 6 of 6 from the free throw line for Norm in 33 minutes. You know, again, the coolest part was just how smooth he got all of that. It was very, very easy night for him. And again, it's scary that he can make 30 points look easy. And third star, honestly, Fred's got a lot of stars. You know, Fred, you know, the two-point shooting, again, 1 for 12 from the field, getting blocked 4 times. I just can't overlook that. So I'm going to give it to Bembry, man. Bembry, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 4 of 6 from the field. Missed his 3, but was 5 of 5 from the free throw line. I mean, that's a pretty efficient outing for a guy who, again, doesn't really shoot the ball. So I thought Bembry was very smart in the way he played. You know, there were some times where, you know, okay, you know, he turned the ball over against a full court press, and that kind of led to a bad stretch there. You know, he overplayed on a pass, lost, you know, and gambled for a ball, didn't get it. The Rockets got a transition 3, Raptors called timeout. Like, you know, stuff happens, right? But I thought on the whole, Bembry was quite good, and I enjoy very smart players. And Bembry is a very, very smart player who knows how to make the right play, and he's unselfish, and he tonight he even scored, so it's all good. In terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, this one's really tough. I might have to give it to David Nwaba, a.k.a. Still by Nwaba, Still by the Raba. Yeah, I mean, like, the fact that he drew 2 fouls on Kyle Lowry in the fourth quarter and actually forced Kyle to go to the bench, because at that point he had 5 with like early in the fourth quarter. That alone is enough, because I don't think anyone else did that much. Eric Gordon got some shots. He made them. You know, we know he can do that. Oladipo scored. John Wall scored. You know, PJ Tucker, Daniel House, you know, whatever. I'm just giving it to Nwaba. Honestly, if you can get under Kyle's skin, which he didn't really do, but he did pick up 2 fouls on Kyle, that's probably more than most of the other guys did against Kyle tonight. So that does for the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see what happens with the Raptors. I mean, man, I remember saying like earlier in the week, I was like, you know what? You know, the schedule's coming out. Raptors haven't been impacted by COVID that much, you know, knock on wood. And then this happens. So we'll see. Hopefully Pascal can come back soon. Of course, that's the biggest loss. And of course, hopefully we get Nick on the sideline soon. I'm really, really curious as to what Nick did tonight, how he coached the team. Or, well, so first off, you can't actually coach the team. It's against the rules. During the course of the game, there's no communication from, like, you can't have a cell phone on the bench or, like, some sort of, like, you can't be, like, what's happening. Or, you know, just, you can't FaceTime. Like, you can't have that contact, outside contact. So, I'm curious to see how Nick watched this game. If he, it was, I like to think that he was in isolation, so probably some, like, hotel room somewhere. You know, probably with his, like, guitar and keyboard in the corners. And like, I don't know, man, eating Fisherman's Friends. And I don't know. I have this image of Nick Nurse turning on his TV in his hotel room, kicking his feet up, maybe wearing his shoes on the hotel bed, and eating like 3 packs of Fisherman's Friends or something. And then during halftime going to play, Wonderwall on his guitar. I don't know, man. I'm very curious. Like, what is Nick doing in isolation? So hopefully they're all good. Honestly, jokes aside, and like, COVID's obviously no joke. Like, you know, hopefully everyone's all good. You know, again, the Raptors have been very fortunate to this point, both this season and last season, with not being impacted directly as much by COVID. So hopefully it remains that way. But again, Raptors were able to make the best of a difficult situation. They were able to get the win. And yeah, we'll see what happens going forward. So it's all really touch and go for now, but you know, they won. That's the most important part. So thanks everyone for listening. I really appreciate it. Please continue to rate, review, subscribe to the show. Yeah, I'll be back on Sunday when the Raptors play again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.